You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Spotlight on eWomen, the place for everything eWomen Network. Entrepreneur, enterprising, enlightening, and exciting. Please welcome your eWomen host, Phyllis Smith.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight on eWomen Network. I'm Phyllis Smith. So imagine spending your days, every waking moment, creating, planning, developing, growing this business of yours that you are so passionate about. It's your heart and soul. Only to lose it all in an instant because of a legal issue, one that maybe you didn't know about or one you might have neglected. Well, today is your day because joining me on Member Spotlight is attorney Nancy Green. And what she does for a living is she helps entrepreneurs and particularly women entrepreneurs avoid legal landmines that can destroy their business. So Nancy Green, welcome so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Phyllis. It's a delight to be with you again, always.
So before we get into all the legal stuff, and don't turn off yet, everybody, because I know when you hear legal, you're like, boring. Believe me, there is nothing boring about this. And it is vital, and you need this stuff if you want to be in business. So before we get to that stuff, and we are going to get to all a bunch of great tips that you're going to offer us later, tell us if you've ever been in a position yourself where one bad decision threatened everything you built.
Yeah, it's sad to say, but yes, even it happens to attorneys that we can make that same slip up and essentially not take our own advice. So, yeah, I started with went into a partnership with another law firm that didn't get documented well, didn't have the right culture fit to me, and that really put me at risk of both the career I'd build and was building, and affected a lot of my client relationships as how that whole mess with that firm went forward.
So tell me more about that. So what were the dirty details on that? and what did that feel like for you, especially someone who, quote, should know better?
Yeah, I'll start with the harder, which is actually the easier, right? Which is, how did that feel? And it makes you feel like dirt, right? Not just that, oh my God, I made this mistake and it's my, 18 years into the career and I'm at risk of not having a career anymore. But I know better than that, right? I tell people not to do that. So what happened, and I made all the excuses everyone makes when they make these mistakes, knowing that I shouldn't. So my second law firm at the time was blowing up. We had two different offices and the DC partners were fighting with the Virginia partners, and I was sort of monkey in the middle. I was a partner who sat in Virginia but worked mostly with the DC group and had about 30 days to figure out what I was going to do with my career. And another firm that had been chasing me kind of popped in and said, hey, we can do something better with you. And because of that time pressure that I put on myself and was feeling, because at the time I was the primary breadwinner and I was the one carrying our insurance, I jumped in with this other firm without doing my due diligence to see if we worked. And worse, I didn't get what we actually agreed to in writing. So as that relationship progressed, and I said, hey, the deal was 6 months as of counsel and then I become an owner, right? And they're like, well, that wasn't the agreement. Or, hey, this is what my compensation was supposed to be. And no, that's not what we agreed to at all. And ended up leaving that firm 8 months into it because there were all these questions coming back and forth about what we'd actually agreed to. And then some of the emails that I knew I wasn't overly worried about because I knew I had email traffic as to what we agreed to. All those emails mysteriously disappeared from my email account that my business partner had control of as well. So the documents I thought I had, not so much, because I didn't take the steps, extra steps to protect them. So that was a nightmare.
Well, is it because of that experience that you are, why you've sort of taken on the challenge to help others prevent a similar situation that you were in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a couple things were going on at that time. One was being in that situation myself. And what I was starting to do at about the 18-year mark was look back at my career and look at my clients and the problems they were having in common. And what I noticed is more and more women had these problems of getting into these bad partnerships because in my case, it was a good friend's business partner. Or the husband's good friend or someone they met for church but didn't really know. So there was that appearance of trustworthiness and relationship that really wasn't there, right? Because it was a secondary, third relationship. And women almost consistently weren't documenting those agreements. And then in the end, those agreements were turning around and biting their backsides off. So now they'd built this business with someone and either the business got blown up from the dispute or the other person took out it, or it just became a mess. So that's really when I started this focus on, there's not a whole lot of information out there for business owners to avoid making these mistakes. And if I made it with my background, you know, holy goodness, how is someone else who's not got that background going to be able to avoid this mess? It should be 90% of the time avoidable. So yeah, that's where I got really passionate about going out and speaking and talking to people about these are some mistakes and we justify all the times on, oh, maybe it's not going to work. Let's not spend the money or I trust this person. Don't sell yourself short like that.
All right. So you made the mistake. You help others avoid those mistakes and you've written a book also about this, navigating legal landmines. And so it's something that is prevalent, and it could just destroy your business. So, I do want to get into, you have so many great tips that you can offer business owners. But before we even do that, and it is coming, I promise, something interesting that is about you is part of your journey is that you've lost a significant amount of weight. Why and how is that impacting your business?
So two reasons on the why. First, I actually started a process with Celebrity Science, which was the rebranding and the up-leveling everything. And learning, among other things, that, oh, but hey, by the way, you're wearing a size too big, started changing how I looked at myself and how I interacted with people. But about 6 months into the Celebrity Science process, I was doing and litigating a case that's still actually ongoing that at that point had been 3 years in litigation. And my opposing counsel, who was male, accidentally copied me on an email that was a very frank and not so flattering discussion of what Me Naked would be. So that kind of made me sick to my stomach. Yeah. and so that had some issues with that and how that played out, but it really got me looking at myself more, even more so as to how did I want to be showing up? How did I want to be, you know, I had always said, you know, yeah, I really need to get back in shape other than, you know, oval. And that was sort of the kick in the pants that finally made me say, you know, enough, just enough. It's got to become a priority for me and not just lip service. So that's what really started me on that journey. And go ahead.
And how has that or has that impacted the way you do business at this point? Is there anything in that that has changed for you on a business level, not just that you went down a whole bunch of sizes, but that's changed for you in your business and also how you help other business owners?
Yeah, it absolutely has changed my business as well as how I help other business owners. Let's face it, women, we're judged on how we look. There's no getting around that as much as we hate it, right? In part, getting back to the image I wanted of myself in my head and having that match the exterior person helped me build in more confidence in how I interacted and what I did and what I felt confident reaching for, right? So that has percolated through everything, including my business and what I'm willing to do. But it also helps me working with other women business owners to say, look, yeah, I know you can do what you do in your jammies, but no, right? That polished, professional, sorry, socially conforming look matters a lot. And just how you feel and how you present. Forget what other people think about you, but how you feel and how you present. And if you know you've got it going on, that conveys out.
Right. Now, also, you know, because you do, you definitely work with a lot of women entrepreneurs. I want to go back now to what we were talking about, helping other women entrepreneurs avoid the legal landmine that that had happened to you. Is it more prevalent for women entrepreneurs to get themselves in a legal mess in regards to their business?
You know, in looking back at over 20 years as a business lawyer and business litigator, that yes, it seems to be. In part because we're so relationship focused that sometimes we're afraid to ask for that document. And sometimes we don't think about it. Sometimes we're a little, you know, eye in the sky, everything's going to work out great. Or we started as this is kind of a hobby, it's a side, and it grows, and we just never take the steps to bring it forward. But a lot of my cases, and firm-wide, not just me, right? Because as a woman attorney, I tend to draw more women clients anyways, because there's that synergy. But even across looking at my partners who litigate, there's a lot more disputes where the woman is a business owner. And I found that when I was a solo practitioner, right? I'd have bigger firms and male attorneys be much more aggressive with me as a solo woman law firm than I did even joining this firm, which is not significantly larger than what I was. But that was that whole perception that, hey, a woman might be easy pickings.
Yeah. We don't want to be that way, but by the same token, it's our gift and our magic to, as a woman, to have that softer touch, and to be socially conscious in that way, in terms of relationship conscious, really. And that could also lead to something I think that could be a really big mistake, is that when a woman goes into partnership, you know, they want this equal partnership and they want to do 50-50. Yeah. But that is not the way to go. Am I correct on that? And if so, explain why.
Yeah, it is almost never the way to go. Women-owned business or male-owned business, it doesn't really matter to be a 50-50 unless you set out rules on how to deal with that. Because if you're 50-50, what ends up happening sometimes is in the business, you logjam, right? One wants to go one way, one wants to go the other way. And as you keep doing this, your company can't progress. And in fact, your company usually gets ripped apart because and it could be two good things, right? One wants to take this business opportunity, one wants to take that business opportunity. And you can't agree, and now you're stagnated. And now, because you're stagnated, there's that resentment that grows between you, because you're now rubbing. So it's almost never a good idea to have 50-50, even when I've got like a husband and wife couple that comes in and says, hey, we want to be a business, we want to be 50-50. And I'll say, stop. Whose business is this really? Because it's always one spouse's, right? It's always one who's actually going to be working it and one who's supporting it. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you really insist on 50-50 against my advice, I'll write into the agreement, the operating or shareholders agreement, if there's a tie, the person whose business it really is breaks it. So now I've gotten you out of that deadlock. And how to resolve those disputes. And again, sometimes when it's two people truly coming in equally, you say, okay, this is your sphere of influence. You've got finances, so you've got the deadlock breaking vote here, and here's not. If you're going to do 50-50, you have to have some way to break that deadlock.
Yeah, because that could be that one gotcha, you know, and in the spirit of it's in the spirit of doing the right thing and wanting everybody to have an equal share. But at the end of the day, that can, and I'm sure you've seen businesses destroyed over that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So now listen, Nance, we're going to have to take a short break. But when we come back, you've got a lot of stuff we're going to go into about just tips on how to avoid those legal landmines that can destroy your business. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Do you feel like you're drowning in administrivia? Do you have a podcast you would like transcribed to repurpose as a blog or even a best-selling book? Rhonda's Virtual Office is the answer to the freedom you crave so you can get busy doing what you love. Let Rhonda's Virtual Office give you the relief you need. Visit rhondasvirtualoffice.com and get some peace of mind today. Rhonda's Virtual Office is the go-to transcription service for EWN Podcast Network.
Calling all speakers. eWomen Network has speaking engagements all over North America that must be filled. Are you a gifted messenger, author, expert, or successful entrepreneur that can help women entrepreneurs grow their businesses? Our mission is to help 1 million fulfilled women each achieve $1 million in annual revenue. If you're a speaker that can help women prosper, go to eWomenNetwork.com and sign up as a pro member of our Speakers Network. That's eWomenNetwork.com.
Welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen. Here's your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen Network. I am speaking with attorney Nancy Green. And Nancy is an eWomen Network platinum member and a celebrity science graduate. And we see her quite a bit around our offices here in Dallas. And we love her. And we've seen a huge transformation that Nancy was just talking about, a physical transformation that also translated into a transformation in terms of your confidence, right, Nancy? And
absolutely, Phyllis.
and growing your business and changing even how you do business. And so we're glad that we were a part of that to help you. But you're the one at the end of the day, you know, you're the one who takes the plunge and makes it happen. so we've been talking about partnerships, very important, 50-50 and on the 50-50. Somebody's got to have a larger share in your business. But let's kind of on a broader scale, what is the easiest and best thing that entrepreneurs can do to protect their business from a landmine? Overarching, big picture.
Get every agreement in writing every time, regardless of who it's with, in writing, and not legal mumbo jumbo writing, really clear, definitive, this is what I'm doing, and sometimes even this is what I'm not doing. But you have to have those documents in writing. Anyone who tells you that, it's an insult, don't you trust me, why do you need this in writing, run away.
So for example, can you just kind of just give me a list of like top three documents that are essential to a business?
Absolutely. So if you have a business partner, right, if there's more than one owner, you either need an operating agreement or a shareholders agreement, depending on the type of company you have. You need a standard client agreement. You need a standard confidentiality agreement with your employees. And sometimes, depending on what they're doing, you may want to have further restrictions on them, but at least confidentiality.
You also talk about an organizational chart, job descriptions, that even if you're a solopreneur, it's important to have that. Why is that?
So a lot of reasons. So the reason to do the job chart is you can't, and then the organizational chart is you really, if you don't know where you're going, it's real easy to get off track, right? So if you have the job chart of this is my ideal for my company, this is how big we're going to get, and you start filling out the job descriptions of this person's going to do this person's going to do that. As your business grows, right? Because when we all start, if we start solo, it's like, okay, I'm everyone, so this seems kind of silly. But as your business grows and as you start bringing people in, having that plan, having those job descriptions allows you to say, this is what I'm letting go, and this is the person I need to bring in. And you can be very methodical and planned and organized about that. And having that blueprint ahead of you really helps you miss a lot of the missed forks in the road, the wrong step. You know, should I be going in this way? Should I hire this person? Well, my need right now on my job chart is a web person and not another salesperson. So let me go fill that gap. So it helps you make conscious choices about how to grow.
Oh, wow. So, and if you're a solopreneur, you're it, you still want to, how would that look? Like, what would that organizational job description chart look like for a solopreneur?
So still the same thing. So when I was a solo firm, right, before I started bringing people out, I spent the time and wrote down, okay, this is all the CRUD I'm doing. This is all the lawyer stuff I'm doing. This is all the administrative bookkeeping stuff I'm doing. This is all the research paralegal stuff that I could give out to someone else. And as the revenue came up to the point where I could justify hiring someone, I knew the first things to get off and I knew the person I wanted to look for. I knew I wanted a associate that could handle these types of cases. I knew I wanted a bookkeeper who could handle this slice. And that allowed me to take the stuff off my plate and focus on the stuff I could do, on the overarching design of the business, servicing the clients only I could do at the level I could do it. And so it allowed me to grow with a plan in mind, just the same as if I had already had 10 people starting with me.
That actually is great, just business advice overall for any entrepreneur. How does that help you from a legal perspective?
So from a legal perspective, having those job descriptions for the people, right? Nowadays, there's two laws that most businesses are going to have to pay attention to. Some of them are size related. One is the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is whether or not someone gets overtime. For the most part, that's what that law covers. One's the Americans with Disabilities Act. And for both of those jobs, whether or not you have to pay someone an overtime really primarily depends on what they're doing. So having that job description allows you to make a better decision as to whether or not they're an exempt and not entitled to overtime or need overtime. And if someone then later claims, hey, we should have gotten overtime, it's another way to defend yourself. And then for the Americans with Disabilities Act or any of the Disabilities Act, you say, okay, the essential functions of this job are, it's a receptionist job. They have to be here. So now you get the Americans with Disabilities request saying, hey, I have an illness. I need to be able to leave whenever to have take care of my medical condition. Well, is that a reasonable accommodation? Probably not, because it's too tied up to what they have to do. And that way, again, you can say, I can only accommodate this much. I can't accommodate. And if litigation later arises, here's the job description. Here's why she's not otherwise qualified with her disability, because I need her here, and yet she can only be here 4 hours a day, 4 hours a week, right? So it gives you that backbone, and it helps, again, guide those decisions as to when it's time to let someone go, when you can document you didn't meet this job requirement, you didn't have this job skill, and they come back and say, oh, you fired me because I complained about something or there was discrimination. You say, no, here's the objective test we used. And it helps, it makes your lawyer thrilled, but it does help defend those claims later, and it keeps you out of them, which is really the point, because you're using the right criteria to make your decisions.
Yeah, and I know that sometimes, you know, if you're listening now, you know, you might be going, oh, legal mumbo jumbo, but really the fact is that this is stuff that you got to do, you know? And so we all, because of the internet, it's so easy. We can go online and we can find out this stuff, but that doesn't mean we know how to execute it. I mean, there's just some things that you can't do and that an attorney needs to do for you, right? And that's part of planning for your business and budgeting for your business. So let me ask you this then. So if the worst happens and you get sued, right? What happened? What do you do? What's the first... If you call attorney Nancy Green, like, what's the first thing you do?
Seriously, the first thing you really do is two things. The first thing you do is you lock down all your documents and your paperwork so nothing goes missing. Because if you don't have that, you're really put in a hard place in defending. But the second is really you get on the phone with an attorney who's going to help guide you through that process. Because even on a lower level, small claims type court, there's a lot of issues there. There are a lot of deadlines there that you can mess up very easily in terms of not knowing, oh, wait, I have to show up. I don't have to show up. These are what I have to do. So that's really sort of step one is if you don't have a relationship with an existing attorney, find one pretty much immediately.
That's not always the easiest thing. I mean, there are things out there now, of course, like what is it? Is it not legal Zoom? Is it legal Zoom? What's the thing when they come to your office and you get like, they give you a will like that kind, you know, you get a free will if you get the right. So I like anything, not all attorneys are created equal. So what are the things that someone can look for in hiring the right attorney, the right fit for them and their business?
Right. So the things you're looking for when you're going out to hire an attorney is first that they do the kind of law that you need. So you don't want to hire me as a business attorney if you've got a divorce matter. I'm not the right lawyer. Right. And you get that a lot. Oh, well, I have an attorney and he does divorce and he was telling me this and that and this about my business. And don't get me wrong, a lot of divorce attorneys do get to learn a lot of business law because it relates. So like I know a little bit of divorce law because it relates to what I do. But you really want someone who's the bulk of their practice is doing what you need and can understand it. You want someone who's going to listen to you and take you seriously. You're going to want someone with experience because you're going to be paid, but understand you're going to pay for that. So the more years an attorney has, generally the more we charge. You want to make sure also that it's a personality fit, right? So if you're fairly laid back and you want to get it resolved, you don't want to hire an attorney whose whole advice to you is fight, 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 if that's not who you are and what you want, right? Because it's a very close relationship. Your attorney is going to see you at the worst times of your life, also the best, but really some of those worst times, and you need someone who can fill that advisor role and not just, you know, we're counselors at law. And that's really important. You need someone who's going to talk to you in English, not mumbo jumbo. So if sometimes we can't avoid using legal terms to talk to you, but then I need to break it down. So I'll go to a court hearing when my client will come and they'll kind of come out of the court going, huh? And we'll sit in the hallway and I say, let me break down what actually happened because the judges and the lawyers started talking judge and lawyer talk and it needs to be translated. And you need someone who's not going to make you feel stupid when you ask that question because you shouldn't speak my language completely.
Well, exactly. And you have your own zone of genius as an attorney and the business owner has her own zone of genius. And you have to be willing to let go and let somebody else work and help you. And that's one of the things about entrepreneurs is we like to do everything, right?
Yeah.
We like to have total control. And the fact is, folks, is that it could be if you can't afford an attorney, well, maybe, you know, at some point you're not charging enough for what you're doing. You have to factor that into your budget. But I want to bring up one thing. And along those lines, somebody is starting up. They have no revenue, right? Mm-hmm. They're just starting their business. And I imagine that there's two things certainly they need to get. They need to have a lawyer and they need to have an accountant.
Right.
Right. And even if you do your own books, you still need to have an accountant.
Right.
So what would be your advice to those startups who say, I don't have money, I can't afford a lawyer. How does that work in your industry to help people like that?
So there are a couple ways to do it. The first is, yeah, you probably really can afford a lawyer. And it may be that you don't put one on retainer and pay them a set fee. But if you need certain foundation documents, like I do packages, right, that you can get a certain types of documents on a flat fee. And you can do that. A lot of attorneys will do that and work with you on a flat fee basis versus an hourly, because it's always the hourly thing that everyone's terrified about, right? It's like, oh, you're going to charge me X dollars an hour and that could be lots and lots of money. But most of us will, on documentation stuff, we'll do flat fees. So that helps. And it's sequential. It's, you know, while there's probably like 30 ideal documents that you should have with your business going forward, you don't need all of them at once. But the ones you need, you have to have, right? Because just getting a form online and kind of cutting and pasting it or saying, hey, I'm doing this business similar to my old employer and I can kind of modify theirs can get you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. I mean, 30 documents. I mean, we don't all know. You just listed three before, and I'm sure there's plenty more you need to, you know, there's more to start up a business. So, okay. So bottom line is you need a lawyer. All right. We all need a lawyer. And you need a lawyer. If you're in business, you need somebody who practices business law. That's just the way it is. You want somebody who's in that zone of genius, who has that experience to help you, because you can lose your entire business. So that's what Nancy does. She helps you avoid that. So, all right. So if you are an entrepreneur, even solo entrepreneurs, is it important, should they have a team behind them? And if so, what kind, and how do they pick the right people?
Yeah, you absolutely have to have a team. And it's actually more important when you're solo, right? Because when I was doing the law firm solo, right, I'd have these lovely ideas. And the only person I could bounce it off of was me. So, right, how is it a lovely idea versus insanity? You can't really judge that yourself. So you kind of have to have your A team. You have to have an advisory team. And that includes people like a lawyer and, as you mentioned, Phyllis, an accountant. You want a bookkeeper because it's not the best use of your time, even if you're a bookkeeper yourself, to do your own books, right? And that sounds a little crazy, but it is. You need a computer professional who can help keep updated on that, because you really don't want to be spending that time saying, is my malware up to date? You need someone who can fix that problem for you. You need a business coach. Before I really became an entrepreneur and realized that as a lawyer, I was an entrepreneur even when I didn't realize it, having a business coach out there is huge. I used to not give a whole lot of credence to that profession, and I do now, so I apologize for my lack of faith before. But you have to have a business coach, because they're going to help you build the business structure, because no one comes into business knowing everything they need to be doing. And you need a mentor. You need someone in your business or a related business who's where you want to go next. So you can learn from their wisdom and don't always have to be recreating that wheel. And that's sort of your minimal advisory team that you need, whether you're one person or 100 people business-wise.
Beautiful. All right. We've run out of time, Nancy. There are so many more things to know about this. And if you want to connect with Nancy, Attorney Nancy Green, it's just that. Go to attorneynancygreen.com and you can reach her there. Connect with Nancy and she can help you and advise you too. If you're at a point where like, well, I don't know, I think I need a lawyer, or even if you have one, but something's not fitting and something's not right, or they're not giving you the answers you need when you need them, because especially again, if you know nothing about this, you, as Nancy said earlier, you need to have someone who is going to talk your talk and not their talk, not legalese. So Nancy, tell us the name of your book again, and you can reach Nancy at Attorney Nancy Green, and how can they get your book?
So my book's on all the forums in hardback and electronic format. It's Navigating Legal Landmines, A Practical Guide to Business Law for Real People. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, all of those places you can find it.
And mind you, it is a bestseller on Amazon.
Yes it is.
So thank you again, Attorney Nancy Green. And until next time.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.